Hello and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. I happen today, however, to be sitting in a home in Ramsbottom, England. I kid you not, I've never been here before. I came over to teach this week a course on the Gospels for the International Reformed Baptist Seminary. And we've just completed the week. It's Friday evening. And the class is over, and I asked a couple of fellows if they would be kind enough to sit down with me to have a conversation with me about a ministry that you may or may not have heard of. It's a publishing ministry here in the UK. It's called Broken Wharf, and that's Broken and then W-H-A-R-F-E, and you can find it at brokenwharf.com. And so you might hear some sounds in the background because our serving boy is preparing supper for us. I kid. It's one of the students and one of our hosts here. Benedict is cooking some supper and we're sitting here and having a conversation. So first of all, let me welcome our guests. I have with me John Mark Allman Smith and Darren Gilchrist. Who are members of the Trinity Grace Church here in Ramsbottom. So, Darren and John Mark, welcome to Word Magazine.
Thank you. It's lovely. Lovely to speak with you.
Good. And you're Darren,
I'm Darren.
People who want to pick up on
yes.
your voice.
Yeah.
And John Mark, welcome to you.
This is what John Mark sounds like.
Okay. Cool. Well, you guys are involved with the Broken Wharf ministry, and so let's just start with that. So, what, Darren, what's your role with Broken Wharf?
So, I'm the general manager at Broken Wharf. I've been doing it for about a year and a half, around about a year and a half.
Okay, so you're the general manager.
Yes.
John Mark, what's your role?
My role is very much unofficial.
Okay.
I have, along the whole way, been more of a volunteer. But when Broken Wharf began, it was Darren who had the initial idea, and then he kind of came to me. And since then, we've basically gone the whole way. So on the one hand, I'm a co-founder. On the other hand, I don't have an official role.
So you get all the successes you can take credit for, but all the problems you can say it was Darren's fault.
It was Darren right? answers. Yeah, he answers for all the issues.
There you have it.
But yeah.
So let me. This is the kind of track we're going to take. I want to ask a little bit about you guys. You can share what you want to about where you are in life and ministry or family, and then we'll talk a little bit about Broken Wharf. And I also want to ask you a little bit about where the confessional Baptist movement is in the UK and what's going on with seminary education with IRBS through Trinity Grace. But let's just start with you guys personally. So Darren, tell me a little bit about your background. Where are you from? Tell me about your family, whatever you want to share.
Yeah, so originally I'm from the States, actually. So I moved from Mississippi, New Albany, Mississippi, which is northeast Mississippi, about an hour from Memphis. I moved in 2010 from there to Cardiff in Wales. Cardiff is the capital city of Wales, and Wales, which is not in England, by the way. Many people get that wrong.
Is it okay to say it's in the United Kingdom?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I moved to Cardiff. I came over originally to do studies at the Welsh Evangelical School of Theology, and also to work part-time assisting a minister in the church at St. Melan's Baptist Church in Cardiff. One of the ministers there, the man doing the majority of the preaching, actually eventually became my father-in-law.
Oh, wow.
So I married into the tribe.
Okay.
So, that was about 2002. So my wife is Rachel. I've got three little ones, one on the way.
Wow.
And yeah, and then I pastored for about 3 years in North Wales. We moved back down to Cardiff, thinking about maybe going back to the States, but decided to stay in Cardiff. And during that time, then we found out about Trinity Grace Church in Ramsbottom. It was during COVID that I really, at the beginning of COVID, came across the church here, and eventually we decided to move up here about 2 years ago, just mm-hmm. over 2 years ago. And it, for us, it was a move because we wanted to be a part of a distinctly confessional Baptist church.
Mm.
The church in Cardiff is from a has a history in confessional Baptist life, so it would have been a church plant of one of the original signatories of the 1689 confession.
Mm.
But it really isn't, I would say, confessional. They're not really, they wouldn't be actively confessional, more of a Lloyd Jonesian broad evangelical church.
Lloyd Jones is still fondly remembered in Wales, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So.
He's still referred to as the doctor.
Yeah.
So if anyone speaks of the doctor, it is assumed
that's who they're talking about.
Exactly. So I moved here. Yeah, that was 2 years ago, and then about 6 months after being here is when I started working with Broken Wharf.
Okay.
I help out in the church with preaching, both at the church and around different struggling congregations up in this area and actually other places as well. So,
So tell me about, if you don't mind, how did you come to the faith? When you came to Wales in 2010, you already had a confessional Baptist sort of framework, or did you come to that while you were in Wales?
Yeah, I'm really thankful that I came personally because I know my character. I'm thankful that I came to confessional convictions being in the UK. Because in America, it can be quite trendy, can't it?
To be
confessional, let's get tattoos of 1689 on our arms. And not that I'm against that or anything, but the point is, it's here in the UK, it's really not something that's just nice to do. I think a lot of churches are beginning to realize this. We need this. This is vital, on the ground, hard. I mean, things in the UK, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, are very... very different than in the States. And so I came to confessional convictions later, after being here, actually. I would have held a more Lloyd-Jonesian view on church life, things like that. So,
but you came to the faith when you were in the U.S.?
When I was in the U.S., so I was in university in Conway, Arkansas, when I think I, at least for the first time, think I heard real genuine preaching.
How about you tell the audience how many times you were rebaptized?
Oh, yeah. So I was saved and baptized twice before I was ever converted. Typical Mid-South Christianity. I said a prayer when I was 5. I said a prayer when I was a teenager. I was baptized on both occasions. The first time it didn't work. The second time, maybe it worked, but it didn't. It wasn't about it working. This was just the teaching that I had received.
Yeah, because it's kind of typical in some independent Baptist circles.
Yes.
That they're,
very much so. So you can imagine when I actually heard true gospel preaching for the first time, it absolutely threw me. Because I remember the man preaching and thinking, well, hold on, whatever God he has, I want.
Mm.
But then that made me think, well, wait a minute, what God do I have then? Because I thought I had the Christian God, and that started a process of probably a good 2.5 years of just stripping God. I happened to unlearn a lot of wrong views of God. And then when I moved to the church in Mississippi, it was after being there for about 3 months, that a group of the men were going through a book study on the glory of Christ by John Owen. And it was in the midst of the first couple of meetings there that I think for the first time I actually rested in Christ. Before that, there was conviction going on. There was a hunger for the word. But was I actually resting in the Lord? I don't think when I look back on it. I wouldn't have known that at the time. But looking back on it now, I realize, I hadn't really rested in him. And so that was when I was converted. And then I was at the church for another three and a half years before I moved to Cardiff.
Okay. So, John Mark, what about you? Tell us a little bit about your background or whatever you want to share about yourself, your family, your faith.
It is a very, very different story to Darren.
Right.
When I think about my life up to now, I'm still a very young man, really. I'm nearly 22, but still 21 years old. I was raised in a Christian home. I've always lived in Ramsbottom, the town of
It's a beautiful town, let me tell you. I've been there this week. It's a gorgeous place. It's kind of your, the name, Ramsbottom, it's kind of like you think of an English town. Yeah. Beautiful
it is,
surroundings,
it's what
very
they call
green.
Quintessentially English.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the butt end of a lot of jokes, but it is actually a really beautiful place to live.
Yes.
And to be in the church here, so my father's been one of the full-time elders at the church here for just nearing 25 years now. And being 21, I've been here for most of his pastoral ministry. And as the church has grown into what I would say an increasingly mature confessionalism, I've really grown with that because I've been there for a lot of the journey. Mm. So I was converted roughly at 11 to 12. Obviously, you know, we all go through the different challenges, particularly of being in high school and being confronted with the world. But, you know, the Lord has wonderfully kept me. And really since about 2019, maybe 2020, I've been studying at university, been studying theology. In the last couple of years, I've begun doing some part-time studies at IRBS, and God willing, that will become full-time in the next few months. So that's where I am. I work with Darren on the Broken Wharf stuff, and it's just a massive privilege to be able to spend a lot of my spare time and a lot of time I don't really have spare at all, but we just find the time to work on trying to get these books out and trying to promote resources. This type of theology.
Yeah.
People in Trinity Grace Church in Ramsbottom are not sitting on their hands. They're they're working. It's an active, working church, and it's really refreshing to see. Let's talk a little bit about the Broken Wharf ministry. So first of all, for those who don't know, what's with the name? Why is it called Broken Wharf? What is Broken Wharf? What's the significance of that?
Yeah, so Broken Wharf still exists today. If you go to London, right in the center, what you might call Old London, you have the River Thames running through, and you've got a bunch of different wharfs along the River Thames. And one of those wharfs, not far from St. Paul's Cathedral, which is quite iconic to the London landscape, not far from there is one big wharf called Queen Hythe.
Mm.
And then about two wharfs over from that is a little wharf called Broken Wharf. Now, there's debate whether why it was called that. Some people, there's books, historical books that say this was where boats came to be broken down when they were old. They would go into that wharf and they'd take them apart and dismantle them. Others say that it used to be a wharf that was a fixed wharf, but it broke. It fell into the River Thames.
Right. The wharf broke.
The broken wharf. Exactly.
There you have it.
But more significantly for us, in that little area was a little meeting house, which a church met at, of confessional Baptist. And the pastor, well, there were two men that we know of, quite well known as confessional Baptist historically, Hanser Knowles and Robert Steed, were ministers of this church. Both of them, Hanser Knowles was a signatory of both the First and Second London. I think he was on the First, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know actually if he was on the First, I can't remember. But he's definitely on the Second London for sure.
I think some people argue that he was an anonymous, you know, one of the anonymous men that supported it, even if he wasn't officially one of the signatories. Yeah,
so Hanser Knowles was there, and it was there at Broken Wharf. So there was a meeting house there, a church that was gathering there, worshipping every Lord's Day. And then when the Act of Toleration came in, remember William and Mary come in, nonconformists now have a bit more freedom. And the Confession of Faith, which was originally written in 1677... in 1689, they decided, well, let's confess this publicly now. So over 100 churches were represented by their messengers at this general assembly, and they gathered at the meeting house at Broken Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where the Confession of Faith was first publicly owned
right.
As their confession. Here's what we believe. We're being very transparent and honest. And of course, there's a whole story behind that, which Doc Renahan oftentimes tells quite well.
And if you've got a 1689 or a Second London Confession of Faith, if you open it up and see the list of signatories, they put their names to that document at Broken Wharf. So it's really representative of what we're trying to promote, achieve. It's to be a publisher completely committed to that confession of faith.
Yeah, awesome. That's a really meaningful name for those who weren't aware of it. The site where the 1689 Assembly affirmed the confession of faith, at which there's been, you know, we're in the midst of a renaissance of this, a retrieval of our confessional Baptist heritage, both in the United States and the UK, and not just there, all over the world, really.
Yeah.
It's popping up in places all over the place.
Yeah.
So this is the name, though, of the publishing ministry. You said it started about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, informally, it was about a year and a half ago.
So what's...
Informally, yeah, about a year. A year, just in a few months, maybe.
What's the first title that came out?
Well, it's a bit of a tricky question, that, because we did publish titles that were previously published by men self-published.
Right.
So we put out, for instance, Sam Renahan's Deity and Decree and his Mystery of Christ. One of the reasons why Broken Wharf also exists is because confessional Baptist books have been difficult to come by in the UK for years. It's notoriously known that if you want a good confessional Baptist book, you have to get it shipped in from the States, and so it ends up costing more just for shipping than the book itself sometimes. So we decided that let's make these things available primarily in the UK and Europe, because we also saw that as a great need. In America, obviously, you guys have a lot of work going on. Spiritually, you can afford it at the moment because, you know, things aren't as thin on the ground. I know this is a stereotype, but things aren't as thin on the ground spiritually, so men can afford to spend time, you know, digging into a lot of this. And this is why we're thankful for the guys, like you said, doing the retrieval in the States. It's sad that we've had to actually learn from our American brothers about our own confession.
About our own confession of faith.
Which was first written over here. And so, being thankful for the American brothers, we were keen to make these books more available. But then our first actual book that was published by us, that had never been published before, is a little book called Under God, Over the People, which is written by Oliver Allman Smith, so it's John Mark's dad. And it is a book that basically deals with chapter 24, and the relationship between the church and the state. And this was a series of talks that Oliver gave providentially just as COVID was hitting. Just before COVID hit, they just got to chapter 24 and teaching through the confession on midweek meetings, was it?
Yeah.
And so we took the talks that he did, the messages that he preached, really. They're not talks, they're messages. And turn them into, you know, book form.
Nice.
That's the substance of the book.
How many titles total have you done that have you put out? But both reprinting things that were already done in the U.S. and unique works.
Yeah. So I think there's a total. Because I lose track of these things.
Right.
But it's six or seven. Is it?
Yeah, six or seven.
Do you have like a goal, like produce one a quarter? Is that what it is?
Eventually, I think we have a goal of doing, you know, a good maybe 12 a year at least.
Yeah.
But we obviously need to build towards that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of what we're doing now.
This year we've had our first real big push to try and publish some new literature. We felt like we found our feet last year. So we have, you know, God willing, in the next couple of months, we've just had this week, we've sent two books to the printers, which has been really exciting. And, you know, God willing, we can have in the next couple of months a few new titles. So we've got three, haven't we? We've got the Nehemiah Cox volume, Vindicae Veritatis, which we've worked on with Dr. Renahan. And we've got a book on missions, on a confessional view of missions. That's partly a biography, but also a biography focused on applying theology.
Who's writing that?
So that was written by a man named Keith Underhill. So Keith Underhill was a missionary to Kenya for, since like the 60s. So 30 years, 40 years. Yeah, 40
years. He was out there for about 40 years, I think 41 or 42.
And he planted a church in Nairobi originally, and then from that church, I don't even know how many churches now. But
well, roughly, there would be 20 churches in Kenya now, which wouldn't be there unless he had
confessional Reformed Baptist churches.
Confessional Reformed Baptist churches. Not all of them are obviously practicing that confession of faith in a way that we would see as they ought to be. But the church in Nairobi is a thoroughly confessional church. They have an association of churches, and they would all, at least when they were planted, be confessional Reformed Baptist churches.
I think I actually met a brother who came out of that circle of churches, who's a member of the Soli Deo Gloria Baptist Church in Budapest. He's a young man, is an engineer who moved to Budapest, and now he's part of that church there.
So he, I think he moved there to study.
Yeah.
Did he? So I know of him, a friend of a friend, and he's exactly, I think he's from the church in Nairobi there.
Right.
Yeah.
So Keith wrote this. This is basically his life work from before going to Kenya. So he came out of Alfred's Place Baptist Church in Aberystwyth, Wales, where Jeff Thomas ministered for a good number of years. And the church there at Aberystwyth sent them out to Kenya. That was the sending church. And Keith is a lovely, lovely man. They live in Liverpool now.
Okay.
But he had been for a good number of years working on this. It's a chunky book. It's thick. It's one that you'd want to use for, church planting missions classes, because it's biographical, but then throughout it, there are what they call biblical foundations to church planting throughout it. So
I want to ask you about, because you've also done an edition of Renahan's Exposition of 1689 for the UK market. Mm. But before we get there, you've got a series. This is one of the first things I saw that you did on social media, on Twitter or something like that. You've done a series of confessional titles too. Like you've done, I'm holding in my hand a hardback of the 1689 confession, and you did a couple other. Are they all? Some of them are softback, some of them are hardback of the Baptist Catechism and the Keach's Shorter Catechism and the Orthodox Catechism, right? So you got a fourfold collection of symbolic works.
Those four. Yeah. So the story behind them is that we didn't actually publish those particular volumes, but they were published by some friends of ours, particularly friends of Darren's. Now, Darren was actually involved in their publishing by a small Reformed Baptist publisher called Parizier. Darren was kind of very instrumental in helping them and drawing alongside them. We are their stockist, and so we distribute all their titles for them, at least in the UK. And so we do a lot of promotion of these books. This one's a nice. It has some distinctive elements to it. You've got the Baptist Confession version in your hand there. What that has that's nice about it is it has the scripture proofs, and I know that some people would really appreciate that, and we've had people who want to buy that one in particular, because then they can look down and they can see the scripture proofs almost stated in the King James, or there's one reference where it's from the Geneva Bible, interestingly, and they picked up on that in the edition. Mm. So it's a really nice book.
Are you familiar with what particular Heritage Baptist?
We're on social media, so occasionally things will pop up and we'll go, oh, there's something going on there in the States, So, and I think a few of the titles have come over here through one of the retailers over here. Yeah. We have heard of them.
They've also produced volumes, hardback volumes that have the proof text. They have a King James version and a New King James version.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I noticed that recently.
Yeah.
So these brothers are in Scotland.
Okay.
And when they published this work, both of them were church planting, and I kind of came alongside them and said, look, how can I help? Scotland is very difficult spiritually. It's a very spiritual, barren place. as a lot of the UK is, but particularly very anti-gospel. And we basically wanted to say to them, look, you guys are church planting, you're pastoring, you're parenting, how can we help? You know, and so we basically said, let us warehouse and distribute and do all that for you. Yeah. All the behind-the-scenes work so that you can just focus on what you're doing.
Another before we get to talk about the Renahan book, I had also picked up this this title. I think it's relatively new. You guys are putting together. It's called Christian Basics. John Hall and Oliver Allman Smith. Tell me about this book. What is it about?
So Christian Basics, this is actually the second edition. Christian Basics was originally written by John Hall a number of years ago, actually, and has oftentimes been used for, it's really good for new membership, maybe classes, introducing people to the basics of Christianity. And it's been, you know, we as a church, for instance, would use it in our new members' classes.
Yeah, I'd say it's 71 pages in length. With questions, I got a copy myself. I'm gonna go home and read it, and looks like it might be something that would be good in discipleship or new member class or something like that.
I mean, the wonderful thing about that book in particular is that it's been used all over the world before we've even looked at it and done a few slight edits, kind of worked through it and published it as Broken Wharf, and it means that there are a lot of people who have already found the book helpful. It's in many ways, I think it's correct to say that it's been in circulation for maybe even 20 years now or something that. And so it's kind of tried and tested.
Right.
And so it's been a wonderful thing to be able to almost be given that work and to pick it up and try and promote it just for use in churches and things like that.
So this second edition is by John Hall, and you'll notice, and Oliver Allman Smith. So what Oliver did basically is help sort of do some of the editing, and we made the confessional theology behind it a little bit more explicit in the book. It was already there, but John Hall, when he originally wrote it, was a man of his day, and there was really no need at that time.
Right.
Whereas now there's more of a confessional emphasis, at least explicitly. And it's a really good book in that sense, then, in terms of on-ramping people onto confessional Christianity. Because a lot of people feel a bit, you know, for whatever reason, they might feel off-putted, you know, be put off confessional Christianity. This is a really helpful book to kind of gently introduce them to confessional theology.
One of the books to talk about, and I said we would talk about it a few minutes ago, is Dr. James Renahan has just come out in the U.S. I guess it's listed as being printed in 2022, but I don't think it started to be really widely distributed till January or so of this year, 2023. But it's his exposition of the Second London Confession. It's kind of a volume two in a series that he did with Founders Press in Florida. It's a thorough exposition of the Second London Confession, drawing on Jim's, I guess, career, really, of studying this. I think probably the most able person in the world right now in knowing the history behind the Confession of Faith and the interpretation of it. But anyways, that's in the U.S. Founders is distributing it. But in the U.K., you guys have come out with a U.K. edition. It's a beautiful edition. It's a nice hardbound book. It's got a ribbon.
It's got a ribbon. Yeah.
Got a ribbon.
You can't go wrong with ribbon.
It's got an embossed cover on the back. And so tell me about how that came about with this volume.
Well, for us, it was a really simple one because we want to promote confessional Baptist Christianity. We want that to become, you know, normal in our churches for people to, you know, find their confessional roots again and see theology through this lens. And obviously, we've known, you know, Jim, I call him Doc. We've known Doc for years and years now, and it's just been a privilege to learn so much from him. And when we saw that he was bringing out this work, we viewed it very much, I know Darren might want to add something, but we viewed it very much as the backbone to all our publishing efforts. We think that if we can bring out an addition of that which can last for years and years, which can really be the backbone of all the other things that we produce. We can't go far wrong, especially with, as you mentioned, how qualified Jim is to write the book, how many years of experience he's had studying the confession. Yeah. So it's been nothing but a privilege to do that book, and we really envisage that being a book that, for as long as we're around, we will be publishing, basically.
So let me ask you this. I want to talk a little bit about confessional Baptist life in the UK. But so you've got this fledgling publishing ministry. How have the books been received by people in the UK? Have you found interest? Are you doing conference tables? How are you promoting the literature that you've produced thus far? And how's it been received by Christians and churches?
Yeah, so I would say, I think it's important to understand that we don't exist in a vacuum. So Broken Wharf emerged in parallel with two other things that developed. One of those being discussions on association, Confessional Baptist Association, but also IRBS UK, the seminary which you're here teaching this week for. So this is sort of a third thing that's happening alongside those two things. When the churches were getting together and, you know, having these discussions, those who were involved already had an interest of wanting, you know, to see more confessional Baptist material available. The timing just up until a year and a half ago really just hadn't, you know, in God's providence, it just hadn't really come about. And so, but as the association develops, as IRBS UK develops, I think what we're seeing is that then the publishing is also developing. And so in terms of how it's being received, it's like, I would say it's similar to how the association and how IRBS UK is being received. And that is to say that there is a small but growing interest at the moment. Because we're really here in the UK starting out really at ground zero again when it comes to confessional Baptist stuff.
That's it. Just to build on what Darren's saying, this association of churches, we have three churches, we hope that there will be four or five in the next few months, because we've got another meeting in June and there are churches who are applying. And this association will have been, as far as we're aware, the first association of confessional Baptist churches in hundreds of years in this country. And so we very much see Broken Wharf as coming alongside that, coming alongside Reformed Baptist training. Very much not in the progressive sense, but in just the sense of we're trying to move forward in this movement of recovery. And so there's almost a twofold aspect to it. On the one hand, we're trying to get out there to really spread this message, to try and get this good theology kind of in people's churches, in people's homes, really in their minds, but also just try to serve the confessional Baptist churches here. So on the one hand, almost trying to get it out there, but on the other, just trying to help, you know, very much our own church too, come to a maturity and to kind of better understand these
things. Well, I was going to ask, and maybe you've already really addressed it, you know, I was going to ask, what is the state of the confessional Baptist movement in the UK? I mean, it is kind of weird. I mean, it's the second London Baptist Confession of Faith. I mean, the roots of our movement is in England. And we've had, I guess, we've had in God's providence this revival of interest in confessionalism among Baptist churches in the U.S. So that, you know, it's really been brewing probably since the 1950s and is, you know, gained acceleration probably really in the last 30 years. I was telling somebody earlier, one of the pastors who was here for the class, Pete, that, you know, when we started our annual Keach conference in Virginia 20 plus years ago, there were only a handful of confessional Reformed Baptist churches. And, you know, I think now there are probably 15. So it went from two or three to 15 in about 20 years.
That's encouraging.
And it's continuing to grow.
Yeah, that's great.
So, but anyways, it's kind of we would think.
Yeah.
This is the motherland.
Yeah.
Well, what happened?
It's just funny thinking of this week, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how long was your flight over from Virginia to get here.
I mean, it really wasn't that long from D.C. to D.C. to London, then London to Manchester. I don't know, you know, I mean, the flight was maybe 7 or 8 hours from the U.S. To London, then a transfer to get here. But
because it's amazing that we're in the state now where we have to fly someone over on a plane for 8 hours to come and teach us about our own confession of faith. Basically, that's the state that we're in. And on the one hand, it's absolutely wonderful to be able to receive that teaching, and the fact that we can do that today where they couldn't have done that in the 17th century. It would have taken them by boat, you know, months. But on the other hand, it just shows the reality of the work here. We are very much in a baby stage, and you know, it was interesting when Darren was telling the story about that church in Cardiff. It's almost an analogy for confessionalism in this country at the moment. A lot of churches have it in their heritage, but there is total ignorance and on the whole a complete disagreement with the theology of the confession.
So a church, an existing church, might have the 1689 as its confession, but it's kind of there, and not much attention has been given to it in decades.
Here, you know, you will have churches who have the confession of faith actually in their legal trust deeds, and that would be that's historical,
right?
You know, so whatever happens with this church building, this chapel, which you know, over here is hundreds of years old. You know, you're talking about some chapels from the 1700s. But the 1689 would be in the trusted legal trust deed, and so whatever happens to the chapel has to happen. But then what that means actually really has completely been lost, and so there's not a real understanding. So I think one of the difficult things I often find, because I'm originally from the States, I find that I have sort of two hats that I sometimes have to wear. Sometimes I'm thinking in my American hat, and then my wife has to remind me, get that hat off, you're not in America. Oh yeah, that's right, okay. Put my UK hat on. And I think that what a lot of people don't realize over here is, obviously, things in the UK amongst evangelicals developed quite differently than it did in the US. And obviously we had the influence of men like Martin Lloyd-Jones and a generation of men in the UK who, by and large, when you compare it to guys and evangelicalism in the States, were actually solid men, solid men, which we're thankful for. And there is a sense in which what we're doing is really seeking to pick up the mantle from those men and seek to build on their, because Lloyd-Jones had many strengths. He was an excellent preacher. You know, his emphasis on, because he was involved in recovering the doctrines of grace in the UK.
He brought us Banner of Truth. And without Lloyd-Jones, we think, as far as we're aware, we wouldn't exist today.
Yeah, but obviously he's working alongside the likes of Ian Murray and Jeff Thomas and, you know, all these other men who we know of in sort of the Lloyd-Jones era. But what I think a lot of people don't understand is Lloyd-Jones wasn't confessional. He acknowledged the confessions. He acknowledged the Westminster Confession of Faith. He himself was from a Calvinistic Methodist background, which based their confession of faith on the Westminster Confession. But the kind of ecclesiology that he argued for in the book, for instance, called Knowing the Times, is what he calls, his words, ecumenical evangelicalism. That's what he argued for, which was not the same as, in fact, he actually, in some places, has a bit of a jab at confessional Christianity. Yeah. But then you got to remember, these men had not seen real healthy confessional Christianity in their era. All they knew was liberalism in the Baptist Union, in the Methodist Church, in the Anglican Church, obviously, in lots of circles like this. So what confessional Christianity, like... was, in one sense, very, very unfamiliar.
So it's the infant stages of the development or the growth of a confessional Reformed Baptist movement in the UK. So aside from those sort of issues, what are the spiritual needs of people who live in the United Kingdom right now? What is it like? What's the spiritual state of the nation and the state of the church apart from you know, talking about the development of evangelical or of confessional Reformed Baptist churches?
So I think that the way I often explain it is, and again, remember, I'm from the Mid-South in the States, so I know this isn't always the case, but where I'm from in the States, you can sort of compare that part of the vineyard to a very, from a distance, a very leafy, you know, look at all this life, look at all these plants that seem to be growing in this vineyard. And then you get up close and you realize the majority of it's weeds that just haven't died yet.
Mm.
And really, there's actually few real flowers amongst the weeds. Whereas over here, Christianity across the board, it's like a rocky part of the vineyard.
It's dead.
Completely barren. And really what you have occasionally is between the cracks an occasional flower cropping up. And that's what it's like over here. So there's a sense in which, more so than in the States, what you see is what you get. Whereas in the States, oftentimes you get a lot of profession of Christianity. But a lot of that's just American Christianity. It's not biblical Christianity.
Right. Here you don't get people professing Christianity.
Oh, no. They would think you're weird. So, for instance, to give you an example, in Mississippi, if somebody was running for mayor, oftentimes you know how they go around and they put door hangers on the door, or they'll put, you know.
Right.
It always says what local church they go to. You know,
right.
I grew up in such and such church. And if they didn't put something like that, you would kind of go, ooh, suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas over here, if you did that, people would go, they go to a church? That's suspect.
Huh.
You know, they just look at it as completely weird. That, you know, because Christianity really is, we're not in a post-Christian culture, we're in an anti-Christian culture.
That's it. We've gone past what you would call a post-Christian culture, at least in how I've heard a lot of people use the phrase. I know people use it differently.
Yeah.
But to balance that, though, there is still a strong independency in this country. Obviously, it depends on what you mean by strong, but you go to, you know, most towns and there will be some form of independent evangelical church, and there will be some gospel preaching. Maybe the sermon's only 15 minutes, but there will be gospel preaching there to an extent.
Mm.
So there is still, you know, a strong backbone to independent evangelicalism here, but it is still obviously in relation to the population of the country. Absolutely,
yeah. And it's a country that's had a Christian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's the remnants of that in whether it's standing public church buildings and influences, you know, back decades, centuries, even in the culture.
Sorry, I was just going to say, what you have now is, you know, an evangelicalism which was built by Lloyd-Jones in many ways, and those men who were involved with all that. But I think it would be safe to say there is a slight drift amongst a lot of the evangelical churches because things have been divorced from their confessional moorings.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this sort of little bit of drift. And obviously with technology, more and stuff from America comes over often, and we get influenced by that. There's a lot of an American influence as well. So
we talked about Broken Wharf. We talked a little bit about this nascent association that's in the infant stages. A little bit about the theological education. IRBS is doing classes. They're meeting have all the meetings been at the Trinity Church in Ramsbottom? Have there been meetings done
all
in other places?
All of them have. There was a launch of what you might call IRBS UK, and that happened in Westminster. So I believe that may have even happened in Westminster Chapel. That first week where Jim came and taught his symbolics course.
Westminster Baptist Church, maybe.
Maybe it was Westminster Baptist Church. Yeah. But since then, it's based at Trinity Grace Church, Ramsbottom. That's the local church that look after the work of IRBS on this side of the pond.
Mm. I know there are about a dozen students there this week, including a couple of young men who are in pastoral ministry, who are embracing confessional theology, and a couple of young men who are preparing for the ministry.
Mm.
So it was encouraging. to be there this week and to learn together with you guys. For our listeners, let's say somebody wants to get your books. How do they find your books? Let's say somebody out there wants to get the UK edition of Renahan's work. They're collectors. They've got the American edition, but they want the UK edition, or they want some of the. They just want to see your titles and find them. How do they find them?
So obviously you can go to brokenwharf.com. And again, Wharf is spelt with the Old English. So it's WHARFE.com. We're on social media. We have a mailing list.
You got a podcast too, right?
We have two podcasts. We have the Broken Wharf podcast and the Coffee House Sessions.
Well, I was going to say, keep your eyes on that podcast, because I'm about to ask Dr. Riddle, the minute this goes off, whether he'll come on for an episode in the near future. So you might find that interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can find us there. We do have a U.S. distribution hub. So some of our titles are available in the States, and they get shipped from the States to people.
But you do that through the Broken Wharf
website. Through the Broken Wharf website. If you go to the bookshop, we have three... bookshop. You have a UK, a US, and an Australia bookshop. And the US bookshop, if you clicked on that, for instance, you'd be able to see which titles are available. We're going to make more titles over time. Because Judicious and Impartial Reader is already available through Founders, the only way you can get that one is really if you contact us and we can quote you for international shipping. But I forewarn you,
it would be costly.
It will be costly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah. So that's how you can access.
What if we have somebody out there who's just independently wealthy and wants to give a gift to help the ministry keep going? What do they do?
Well, you can contact us at brokenwharf.com. And our email is info@brokenwharf.com, and you can just email. Let us know what you're thinking. We can discuss that and go from there. Really.
And buy lots of books.
Yeah,
we want to get the books out there. So
yeah, I mean, it does cost to get large pallets of books sent over from here to there. So that, you know, that's an expense that's always in the back of our minds. Yeah, we're going to have to get these books over there. So
right. Well, many of our churches have, if not bookstores, book racks, and obviously. Something about confessional Christianity, I mean, it appeals to the heart and it appeals to the head.
Yeah.
We want to know the faith. We want to rightly divide the word, and we want to rightly teach it. So it's a good ministry to support Reformed Baptist cause, that's for sure. Well, guys, thank you so much. I'm going to bring this to a conclusion. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Word Magazine. I hope this has been edifying for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next issue of Word Magazine, although it will not be this lovely garden spot that I am in right now in Ramsbottom. I'll be back. Virginia's a pretty beautiful place, too.
Nice.
But anyways, till the next Word Magazine, take care, and may the Lord richly bless you.